Welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Weber, Bob Larson, and Dustin Pendell. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning, Brad.
Hey, Brad.
It is a good day here as we're getting some rain. It's always nice to have a rain in July. Even if it changes your schedule a little bit, we always like to see that greens things up. So we're looking forward to some great discussions. We've had a couple really good listener questions that we're going to talk about. One is on foot rot in cows. One is on hay storage, hay wrapping. We're also going to address a little bit as we talk about cool season forages and specifically fescue related to endophyte and how we want to manage that, or especially if we're going to plant it. Before we get into those topics, I wanted to tell you guys, I don't know if you know, Patty, our own Patty Dollarhide from the Beef Cattle Institute, who's our dietitian, she was featured on a podcast recently called The Secret Life of Dietitians. And this is a podcast by a couple dietitians, and they talk about different aspects of nutrition. And Patty went on and talked some about the role of beef in a sustainable food system, and how beef can be a part of that sustainable food system. So if you're interested, that's on Apple Podcasts, but it looks like that would be a good program. So I wanted to jump in and talk to you guys some. And as we look at this time of year, people may be thinking about fall forage needs or even planning ahead to next year and what they might want to plant or put out there. And I know Bob, and myself, we all spent time in Missouri. Dustin spent time in Illinois. So I want to talk fescue.
I was in Missouri.
You were in Missouri. Okay. So we want to talk fescue a little bit, and we want to talk about endophyte. So the endophyte is an infection that the fescue can get, which makes it a little more drought tolerant, but it can have some negative effects on cattle, right, Bob?
Yeah, some of the worst situations that I saw as a veterinarian working with cattle producers was particularly cattle that weren't adapted to that endophyte fescue. So a lot of times, I mean, just from natural selection, maybe the cattle build some tolerance over time, because it's basically a toxin in the grass produced by I'm going to call it a fungus that's in the grass. You don't really see it, though. The plant looks healthy. In fact, the plant is pretty healthy. But it releases a toxin that can really make the cattle, it constricts their blood flow to the periphery. So that's where you'll see in a severe situation, calves will lose the tips of their ears. Maybe the tail switch will fall off. And in really bad situations, you can actually have some hoof lesions and lose the bottom part of the foot.
So it's really bad when it's really hot or really cold. Because you constrict that blood flow to the extremities. Yeah.
And the worst situations I've seen is when cattle are not used to that. They've never been on fescue before, and they're brought in and placed on a fescue pasture that has a pretty hot, high level of toxin in that. And then you can see some really negative effects. If you've got cattle that are kind of used to it or were raised on it and stuff, you can see some negative effects, but usually not nearly as severe.
Okay, so some downsides, but some positives for the grass. So let me give you guys a scenario, and let's just walk through it. Let's say as part of a grazing plan, you want to increase your cool season base. So fescue is a cool season grass, so we'll see some growth in the spring and the fall. And my question for you that I'd like to walk through is, should you add, I have really three choices. I could add the standard fescue, which would be endophyte positive. It has this endophyte you're talking about. I could go get an endophyte free fescue, or now they have them with what's called a novel endophyte, or it's an endophyte that's not harmful to cattle but still has the good effects on the grass. Which of those would you guys recommend if I wanted to expand my cool season base?
Quick question first before they answer this. Are resources unlimited?
No, resources are never unlimited. So mean how much can we afford to spend? Are these going to be different costs?
There is a price difference, right? Just keep that in mind as you're thinking about this. You can, the endophyte free is, 10 to 20% more expensive, and that novel can be upwards of three times more expensive.
Yeah. So three times compared to just the regular
compared and, to your Indifight Plus.
Yeah. And if it's just called Fescue and it doesn't say Indifight Free or it doesn't say Indifight Novel Fescue. Indifight and it's just called Fescue, it's Indifight Positive.
It's going to be cheaper too.
Well, and it's going to be cheaper.
You
if
know,
it's called Cheap Fescue.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually going to, this is all, you know, like a lot of questions, this is a little more complicated than it seems because cattle performance is definitely better with the Indifight Free or the Novel Indifight. I mean, definitely better cattle performance. And again, that's really important to me if I'm bringing, you know, stocker calves that weren't raised on it, or I'm buying some heifers and bringing them in and they're not used to it. It makes me way more comfortable to put them on something that's a lot less potentially harmful. But man, it's not only that the seed is more expensive, it's more difficult to get it established. I mean, the beauty, you know, so we've talked about some of the negatives of Fescue. Some of the positives are it is a tough old grass. I mean, it's relatively easy to get established, and it is going to be there for a while. It's going to, you know, got really good year-to-year resiliency. It's going to be
here for a while. Yeah. A lot of it depends on what's its intended purpose, right? So if you're going to, you know, continuously graze it, an endophyte infected and probably a novel endophyte's the best combination of stand persistence and cattle performance. But, you know, if it's, you're going to plant it along the edge of an area where you're going to punch it up or trample it a lot in a feeding site, something like that, K31 may be a great solution because it's really persistent, it's really tough, and so long as you keep it kind of mowed and trimmed up or clipped up, it minimizes some of that endophyte exposure to your cattle. So there's some trade-offs for sure.
There's trade-offs, and it does have that hardiness that you want there. So are you thinking that those cost trade-offs, or Bob, what you were saying is it hurts cattle performance, but really is that in the spring and the fall, or is that mostly summer and winter?
Yeah, mostly summer and winter. And so again, it kind of fits into your, what are you trying to do? So if it's part of a grazing package where you've got, you know, you're trying to optimize kind of your different grazing, because it'll make good forage earlier than a warm season grass, and it'll make good forage later than a warm season grass. So you've got some extended grazing that you can get from that. But my danger is in the winter and then the summer again. And I don't know that we have time to get into all of the grazing management, but the seed heads and the taller plants are a whole lot more, have a lot more of the toxin in them than if you can keep it grazed down. And then the other guys, you know, the other thing, guys that make this really work, a lot of times they'll interseed some legumes and they know the negatives of fescue, and then they work hard to kind of manage around that by not letting it get really tall and seeded out during the hot, cold times of the year, interseeding with legumes, doing some other things. And then they can make that, what I'm going to, you know, the cheap, the straightforward old Indifight effective fescue, they can make it work, but they're always managing around the negative aspects. Yeah. Whereas some of these more expensive options, you don't have to worry about the health aspects.
Yeah. And a little different if it's your whole program versus if it's a component of your program, and a little different if we're talking, and we've been, I think, mostly talking cows, cow, calf. If you're grazing stockers, you may be able to get something with a little bit different performance, and that would be a concern as you get into the summertime. So there have been good research out there looking at the difference in average daily gain with Indifight positive fescue, but you've got to get it established and keep it established. And putting an Indifight free patch of fescue, it also matters where you are. If you put an Indifight free patch of fescue surrounded by Indifight positive fescue, it's unlikely it's going to stay Indifight free for a long time. So it can get cross-infected. So great points on that. And I want to move us to our next, because this is a great question from one of our listeners. And we talked a few episodes ago about hay storage, how to kind of manage that. But we're going to dive a little bit further into that today, because I thought we had a really good questions here. And it was related to storing round bales outside. And the question was, What do you think, string versus wrap? So I'll throw that to you guys, and Bob Weber, I know you have used a little of both of those. What's your top of the head thought here?
Yeah, I like NetWrap just from the storage and how much water it helps shed. If you know those bales are really tight, NetWrap does a great job keeping the bale integrity together and shedding water, and also makes them a lot easier to transport. I have to borrow a tractor and use pallet forks, and so bale integrity is really important, because picking up one that's fallen apart and sticking in a bale feeder when you got 20 minutes to be at the office is no fun. So
yeah, that's right.
I'm a big fan of NetWrap. I don't like cutting it off, and it's something, in the wintertime if it's frozen, it can be a real pain, but the storage and waste prevention that it provides, I think, sort of outweighs some of those challenges. So.
Yeah, some of this might depend a little bit. I mean, if I'm going to go out and buy a baler, it's going to be more expensive to buy a NetWrap baler than a twine tie baler. But on the other side of it, I can go a little bit faster. It doesn't take nearly as many wraps at the end once the bale's formed with the NetWrap, and then I'm ready to go on to the next bale. And so there's some speed and efficiency for me when I'm baling. I like the NetWrap, but there are some cost sides that make the twine a little bit better. And like a lot of things, if you do the twine wrap well enough, you get some of the same benefits of a NetWrap, but with a little less cost. I could go either way. The other thing to think about a little bit is where is it going to be stored? I think our listener question was being stored outside, which might tilt the advantage a little bit more towards NetWrap. If it's going to be stored inside where it doesn't have to be as tight and to keep the, because I'm not worried about rain coming in on it, then maybe twine is a less expensive option if it's going to be stored inside anyway.
So what is the cost differential, Dustin? Do you have any idea?
Just looking, did some quick research, comment that Bob made with the speed. There was a study out of Wisconsin that says you can bale up to 32% more bales. And so if you take that into consideration, the speed, because you got labor expenses that you've got fuel as well. So a couple of those would be probably two big expenses in addition to the equipment. And so if you buy a new baler that you could add on another $5,000 for that wrapping mechanism. So you got to take that into consideration, as Bob pointed out. The other thing to think about, it's probably a little harder to put a dollar value to, but when you're out baling hay, and we've done this, I don't know how many times, and you're just trying to hurry up and get done because you're trying to beat the rain. And if the wrapping is 32%, you can go that much faster. That might be something to think about as well. But some of the studies say that by going from the twine to the net wrapping, where it's that the twine might be 50 to 60 cents a bale, it could be a buck and a half a bale. So an extra dollar a bale for the wrapping as opposed to the twine.
So does the wrapping, is it going to store that much better? What about my hay losses? Let's say, and Bob, you mentioned outside versus inside, and I want to come back to that, but let's say I'm outside. How much is that going to save me, net wrap versus twine?
Well, one thing I want to maybe point out is how tight the bale is probably the most important. And whether it's twine or net wrap is second most important, but it may be easier to get a good tight wrap with the net wrap. And also the type of hay. So some of the work that's been done has looked at alfalfa. And so you got a leafy, high quality, a lot of nutrients to lose. And maybe that's where a net wrap really shines, where some of an alfalfa type of hay. If you've got a lower quality hay, sometimes a prairie hay or something like that, to be honest, there's less nutrients to lose to start with. And so maybe the drop-off isn't as steep with a little more weathering. And so the type of hay matters. Are you talking about a really high quality legume type of a hay, or are you talking a more mature, lower quality hay? And again, I'll go back to, and the more things I've got going for me, so if I'm storing it inside, then doesn't really matter how well it sheds rain. If I'm storing it on a rock base or something like that, I'm not as worried about water coming up from the bottom. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. So a really good tight net wrap is going to always look the best, but it's also got some additional costs.
So and outside storage, just as you mentioned, is not the same across the board. So how much sunlight can I get to it? Can I get it even? Can I get water to drain away from it? All of those things matter.
Where do I live? How much rainfall do I get? And those will impact it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys gave a summary answer of it depends. Dustin?
So there, that study that I was talking about that looked at the speed, how much faster you can wrap, in addition to some of the costs, they also looked at losses if you store it outside on the ground. And the average total dry matter losses for bales that are stored outside using twine were about 11.3% compared to the net wrap of 7.3%. So there is that coming back to your storage.
Yeah. So a little bit less, and that's going to vary as far as where you are in the country.
Correct.
And I think we've talked about it from the aspect of if you make it, you might have one answer. So you have that additional baling equipment, you have additional costs. If you're buying it, there's really no downside to buying the net wrap versus twine if there's no price differential on the two. And if you're storing it, I would put a lot of my efforts on what does my storage facility look like? What does that base look like even outside? Can I get water to drain away? More so than some of the other differences. So that leads us to, go ahead, Bob.
Can I go off topic just a little? I mean, a little bit, because this is a specific question about storing it outside. And we talked about, well, it's kind of nice to store it inside if you can. But then I'm also thinking about some of personal experience and other things is, you know, how many times am I got to move it? Got to move it from the field to a storage facility. And then maybe I'm wintering cows back on the same pasture that I took it off of. And then I take it back. Does that make any sense? Or should I have just stored it outside at the, on the field where I harvested it and saved myself a couple of trips? I've got more loss because it's stored outside instead of inside. But yeah, part of this is talking to different producers that have come up with different solutions. I know guys that don't move it very darn far. They try to, you know, if they're going to place it as close to where they're going to use it in the wintertime as possible. And then one more point is I've got my friends that are, you know, really pushing towards year-round grazing and try to minimize the use of stored forage to start with, because the bale that I never make, I have zero loss on. And that, you know, if I can do standing dormant forage, I don't have that extra cost. So maybe one thing is one way to decrease my bale storage and harvest losses. Well, don't store it and don't harvest it.
If the cows harvest it. Yeah. The cows are pretty efficient at harvesting it.
Yeah,
cows are amazingly efficient at harvesting it.
So all of those things kind of fit into, it takes a good management system to go completely without any stored forage through the winter in most parts of the country. But there are some guys that are getting pretty darn close to that.
But you can work to minimize it. And I think that, and even as you minimize it, that leads us to our Cattle Chat checklist for this week, which is our top tips for storing hay outside.
Number five, appropriate size bale for your operation, as well as the appropriate wrapping, so twine or net wrap or plastic covering.
Number four, optimize the number of bales that are required.
Number three, minimize handling and the number of times you have to move those bales.
Number two, align the bales to get even sun exposure.
And number one, maintain adequate water drainage. Keep those bales dry.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. We also had another listener question, and man, we love getting these listener questions. So you can always send us a question at bci@ksu.edu. And we like to get your feedback, even if it's just a topic you'd like us to talk a little bit more about. But I thought this was a great topic, and it was a question from somebody who's a third-generation rancher looking to take over as they go to the future. And their question was related specifically to foot rot. So they have some river bottom pastures. They have some creeks in the wetter years that may come, and you kind of get those marshy bottom areas. And the question was, how can I prevent foot rot, and what are some of the things that we deal with when we have to treat it? So, Bob, I want to turn to you and say, what is foot rot first? Give us maybe just a brief overview of what it is, and then we'll talk about some of the prevention.
Well, foot rot is basically an infection between the claws of the feet of a cow or bull. And typically, you know, typically and this question is right along what we typically see as risk factors is wetness. When we get into winter and you get really rough ground, but so a lot of times in dry lot situations where you're talking about wet and mud and things like that, and usually in the times of year where that's a problem. But this question, you know, also says, you know, so summertime, but river bottoms or around water sources or place like that that can get pretty muddy and wet, because the organism that causes this is in the soil. It's hardy. It lives in the soil. It's there all the time. And so if that cow causes any kind of a wound between her claws, and so just, you know, stones, anything that can cause a wound will give that germ a chance to get started.
And it's the mud, so, because those claws on the bottom are hard. When they squish down in the mud, that space between the claws is like the space between your fingers. So you can imagine it doesn't take much to damage that space between your fingers. Whereas if they're on nice hard ground, that space never touches the ground.
Right.
You squish down in mud, you hit that middle space on the ground.
Yeah. So when you think about what's causing this, then that also brings up some of the ways you prevent it. Again, a lot of times we're talking about wintertime or dry lot situations or things like that. So it's about pen maintenance, keeping the pens clean, scraping them, minimizing the amount of mud. So bringing in gravel or something around your water sources. So just trying to minimize how much time cattle would be in those types of situations where they're really down and standing in some mud that could cause some problems. The question also asks a little bit about including iodine. And iodine is approved for use as a prevention for foot rot, and it can be included in mineral mixes, and a lot of times it's in your salt or mineral mix. It can also be just added to a feed supplement as well. And there's a little bit of mixed opinion about how effective the iodine is at preventing foot rot. Probably some ability, but again, like any feed given antibiotic, it depends on how much the cow is eating, you know, does she get the full dose and is she protected? So the people I respect say, well, it might be a preventative at best, certainly not a treatment. So if you've got foot rot going through a group of cows, having iodine in the salt or feed won't clean it up, won't treat the problem, but it may help in preventing the problem.
It's not going to prevent them from damaging their feet. It's not going to prevent some of the issues that come along with that, because that bacteria is in the soil, right? So it's not going to be a perfect preventative.
It's not a perfect preventative. It's a tool we've got and we use it frequently, but real prevention is about kind of protecting the cow's feet. The good thing is, treatment-wise, it's inconvenient to get either a cow or calf in to treat them for foot rot, but usually they respond really well to any number of different antibiotics we have. Occasionally you'll have a case that's a little harder to heal up and may need more attention. But a lot of times if you see a cow that's sore on her feet and you get her in and treat that, she'll respond pretty well and get back to being sound pretty quickly.
Yeah. Foot rot is one of the things that will make them really, really lame, and they can come back from it pretty well.
If you treat it, they'll come back pretty well.
Yeah, you won't see any long-term effects in most of those cases, as long as you catch it relatively early. So what you're saying is environmental management, good drainage in those areas, trying to keep them out of the marshy areas as much as possible. And even if they've got the ability to go back and forth, marshy and not, that will help some, because you help protect that foot, give it a chance to heal up. And then early identification, which the main thing we're going to see is that we get a lame cow in the summertime. we want to check her feet. Hit her up and check her feet beside the street or not. Yeah.
Other things can cause lameness in cows, certainly, but it'd be one of the most common causes.
Yep, absolutely. Excellent. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. And if you have any comments, questions, or anything else you'd like us to address on a future podcast, give us an email at bci@ksu.edu.